Welcome to the Really Awful Movies podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
Is another apocalyptical prediction about to come true? Winds of death will sweep across the world, and whole continents will be cast adrift in an ocean of blood.
Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, action, exploitation, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1970s to today. Be sure and check out reallyawfulmovies.com for reviews, interviews, lists, and terrific movie giveaways. From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 4, a special edition of our podcast, an interview with the legendary founder of Troma, the writer and director, Lloyd Kaufman.
Lloyd, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Yes, sir.
Awesome. Okay, well, first of all, I want to thank you so much for agreeing to answer a few of my questions. This is very, very... It's like a dream come true for me to finally interview you for something I think of value, at least to me.
Well, that's your words, not mine. Let me begin by wishing you and your listeners a Merry Christmas, and I recommend... you go to YouTube and see the Troma Christmas Carol. It's a beautiful, warm, and tender 5-minute or 4-minute Christmas video, and it expresses everything that Troma stands for.
Actually, we've retweeted that about 8 times, and
thank you. Well, thank you very much.
I started on Halloween when it was the Halloween Christmas Carol, and we keep retweeting it because I love it.
And on Valentine's Day, it will be the Valentine Christmas Carol.
Comes between that? So anyway,
how do you like all the fun from Sony? My books talk about the media. I've written 6 books. All of them make reference to the media conglomerates being racist and sexist. And it looks like Uncle Lloyd was correct based on the leaked leaked emails between Amy Pascal and Rubin, or whatever his name is, Scott Rudin. Bastards, they really are sexist. And, when I started in my career 50 years ago, the Directors Guild, the studios, the unions were primarily white men, and they were sexist and racist, and they still are. And the major media conglomerates are just as bad as, if anything, they're worse than they've ever been.
Yep. And actually, some of the white women are even a bit sexist. If you saw that picture with Angelina Jolie and Amy Pascal, didn't look like a comfortable meeting, you know?
So now people can understand why I prefer to sleep on the floor and learn how to defecate in a paper bag in order to have a little bit of artistic freedom and stay out of the world of these blacklisting pigs.
Exactly. Well, you know what? We're going to talk about that in a bit, but... I want to tell you
I'm not bitter.
But you know, the focus of the piece you're writing, honestly, it's a first person perspective, me being the first person, of being a traumatic, okay? Being a dedicated dyed-in-the-wool trauma fan for over 25 years, okay? And I want to basically focus on the fans of Troma. Not so much on the product, which is incredible, right? But I mean, everybody's familiar with, you know, the story about Troma being an incubator for Trey Parker, Matt Stone, James Gunn, as well as...
And we are also a masturbator for many people, too. We're very good at that.
James Gunn, too?
Not just incubator. Sorry.
And, of course, you know, distributing films with, Samuel Jackson, Billy Bob, what have you. But...
We financed a Samuel Jackson film.
Yeah, no, that was a great... You know what?
He wouldn't have a career if it wasn't we. He would be pounding a beat in Brooklyn somewhere and shooting... He'd be a New York cop shooting people or whatever.
You know what's funny? I just saw that movie for the first time about a month ago, Death by Temptation. I loved it.
Isn't that a great movie? Isn't that a wonderful movie? And in its time, the best, you know. It was exactly what the doctor ordered, but unfortunately it came from Troma, so nobody...
I mean,
I think it's one of our best movies.
It's great. I mean, and the funny thing is, the one thing I was disappointed by when I saw it was directed by James Bond III, I thought it'd be George Lazenby, but, took a second to get that, eh?
That almost went over my head.
Yeah. No, but it was fantastic. I mean, it was stylish, it was urban before urban became the word, you know what I mean? And
yeah, and it wasn't, and it had black people. This was 1989, and it had black people who spoke well.
Exactly.
You know, it didn't matter what their color was. They could have been green people.
Totally.
They were humans. And human beings.
That's the thing.
They weren't boys from the hood. You know, how cool is that? And that's more courageous for the for James Bond III.
Yep.
And Charles Huggins, the producer.
Mm-hmm.
That is a much more courageous move than a lot of the stuff that has been subsequently called urban.
Exactly. The fact, and you're right, because when I was watching it, I was like, I was noticing these are black people, but this is not a black film. You know what I mean?
It doesn't matter. Yeah, it could be any color.
Exactly.
That's so great.
And
that's why Chris Rock is so great, because he's a philosopher, and he's got the truth. He tells you the truth. It's
mm-hmm.
wonderful.
Yep.
And I think Death by Temptation, there's a truth there, which is why we financed it.
Yeah, and
we were the only white people. We were the dirty Jews in the team there.
And you picked up the slack, too.
We loved the project.
Yep, and you picked up the slack for Ernest Dickerson as well.
Oh, he's a great guy. He's terrific. He's wonderful. He had to leave the production,
uh-huh.
and then I shot the last scene. I shot the last couple of scenes mm-hmm. where the monster blows up and all that. And I was nervous as hell because, I figured he'd be really furious that, Lloyd Kaufman was trying to, imitate his work. But he's. I since interviewed Ernest Dickerson.
Yeah, I watched it on the DVD. I saw the interview with you guys. And he seemed
and how wise is he, right? I interviewed him about directing for television,
mm-hmm.
and he tells you the truth. Mm-hmm. Anyway, sorry, I keep interrupting.
No worries. So basically, the piece that I'm writing for our site, I mean, I'm sort of taking the title from your book, your first book, and I'm calling it "Everything I Am." I am because of the Toxic Avenger, because truly, who I am, like, as far as, a lover of independent cinema, low-budget horror, etc. I don't want to say B-movie, because I hate the way that's used as a derogatory term, because they're just great.
Anachronistic. The B-movie is gone.
It doesn't exist. Yeah, I mean, they're just great movies. And if it's entertaining, then they're, don't give it a letter. You know what I mean? A movie is a movie, right?
I think you're right, yeah.
And, but the thing is, I'm not the only, 25 years ago, I spotted Toxic Avenger 2 on the shelves of my local mom-and-pop video store, and I was 13 years old, and I was transfixed. I mean, there was no... I couldn't rent it. I was too young. I wasn't allowed to. The store wouldn't rent it to me. However, that began a love affair with Troma that's continued to this day, and if anything, has gotten more passionate, right? And... Sorry?
That's great. Thank you.
Oh, no. And I'm not the only one. I mean, I've met so many people that are covered with trauma tattoos. And the funny thing is, they're covered with Lloyd tattoos as well. And the funny thing is that nobody gets a Harvey Weinstein tattoo, but they get a Lloyd tattoo. Why do you think that is? Why do you think, having met legions of devoted trauma fans like myself, what is it about trauma that inspires such unconditional passion and devotion?
I think they are movies that come from the heart.
Mm-hmm.
They're very the trauma movies are movies that come from the heart. They're very entertaining. They have truths in there that other people either are afraid to deal
yep.
with or don't deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And they are movies of the future.
Yep.
The movies that you see today, sort of comedic horror films and the comedic action films of are very much superhero films rather are clearly very much influenced by trauma, and all you have to do is look at a movie like Spider-Man or
mm-hmm.
Look at that. I mean, James Gunn just did the best film of the year in my opinion.
Yep.
Guardians of the Galaxy
was the highest grossing. Yep.
You can't miss the trauma in there.
Mm-hmm.
You can't miss the trauma in South Park, especially.
Mm-hmm.
South Park's got trauma all over it. And we were ahead of the game, and we don't we don't make any money because we are ahead of the game. And Return to Nuke 'Em High Volumes 1 and Volumes 2, the movies we've been making this year,
mm-hmm.
Volume 2 is just in the editing room.
Yep.
Volume 1 is already out.
I have it, yeah, I've seen it.
Yep. 20 years from now, you'll have probably Amy Pascal and, Scott Rudin and Angelina Jolie
Kevin
and Kevin Hart. You'll all get together, world peace through celluloid, and they'll be making Return to the Return, Return to Nikolai, Part 62 or something.
Actually, you know what's kind of, because I do have a script here of questions, but now that, you know, I'm going to go off script, since you mentioned about being ahead of the time and, like, touching on issues that other films don't touch on, one thing I've noticed about the more recent trauma films, particularly Poltergeist, for example, the level of social commentary is insane, you know what I mean? It's biting, it's incisive, it's daring, it's something no big studio would touch, and yet it needs to be said, it's courageous.
And yet, nobody has seen it, and we basically lost every dime on that movie.
Did you really?
Half $1 million.
Wow.
Yeah, because we're economically blacklisted. The movie played about 300 movie theaters, got good reviews, did okay,
uh-huh.
But you don't make money on theatrical, you lose money on theatrical
right.
distribution. The profit is on television or cable television or what have you, and
mm-hmm.
Because of the vertically integrated mega conglomerates, then they have an oligopoly. We are economically blacklisted. We didn't play on any. I mean, Cannibal the Musical hasn't even played on Comedy Central
mm-hmm.
or any form of American TV.
Which is nuts when you consider that they basically made their name off South Park. You would think they'd want to air anything and everything to do with Trey Parker and Matt Stone.
If some vassal of Viacom, who owned Comedy Central, owned Cannibal the Musical, it would be on Comedy Central every month.
Oh, I agree.
Because we own it, they don't want to, you know, they want to put us, I don't think they want to put us out of business,
mm-hmm.
but basically they shun us. They, you know, it's a club, and we are not part of the Sony, racist Sony, sexist Viacom club.
Well, you're better, you're Troma. And if it's any consolation...
Yeah, we do, to my own self be true, Poultrygeist was also kind of a risk taker,
mm-hmm.
and I think you might notice that after Poultrygeist, there were a whole slew of musicals that came out, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I was one of the individuals that did see it theatrically here in Toronto at the After Dark. I don't know if you recall.
Oh, thank you.
It's one of my favorites. So, getting back to the fans of Troma, if you don't mind.
Not just fans, but please include the air conditioners.
The fans, the air conditioners, the space heaters, what have you, but... I mean, Troma has... It's not just fans, I mean, it's fanatics. I mean, do you recall the precise moment when you started seeing... You know, not just fans, but these fanatics. Like, for example, I'm sure that the Toxic Avenger was a huge turning point, but it must have taken a few years to sort of gestate, you know what I mean, in terms of having people being like, okay, well, I don't just like this movie. I love this studio. I love this, you know, I'm going to follow everything they do. Is there any particular moment you can remember when that happened?
Well, first of all, the only reason Troma still exists
mm-hmm.
Is because of our fans, without
right.
a doubt. We have a core fan base, a real devoted fan base. As you mentioned, tattoos not just of Toxie and Sergeant Kabuki Man NYPD, but of my face.
Your face,
I just saw somebody in, I was just in Australia, and there were two, I did a master class, a Make Your Own Damn Movie master class
mm-hmm.
there. 70 people paid $75 each. To hear me to watch. I have a master class where I show short video clips
yep.
that illustrate all the different steps of Troma.
I attended one of your classes.
Oh, thank you. And this one went on all day. If you can
yep.
imagine these poor people who showed up, they deserve combat pay. And they watched a couple of movies of Troma the same day. In any event, there were people with Troma tattoos in Melbourne, Australia
mm-hmm.
that were in that class. And I was up in Quebec not too long ago, and the guy had my face, a big tattoo of my face
mm-hmm.
on his inner thigh. So I had the pleasure of being near his balls, which was very exciting.
So, I mean, what is it about Lloyd Kaufman in particular? Because nobody, like I said, nobody has a Scott Rudin tattoo or an Amy Pascal tattoo. but people will have a Lloyd Kaufman tattoo, an indelible tattoo for the rest of their lives. What is it about you that make people want to tattoo your face on their body and be next to their balls and so on and so forth?
Well, I think I, you know, there have been a bunch of documentaries about trauma,
mm-hmm.
and the guys making people making the documentaries, they always go to interview Stan Lee or Roger Corman or Trey Parker or James Gunn, and I keep telling them, no, you got the wrong angle. You should do it from the fans, the fans.
I know.
Because they're the ones who, that's what's unique about trauma. It's totally fan-based. Honestly, I can't quite figure it out, but I can tell you this. It's three generations. You know, I go to the Comic-Con. Trauma takes a booth at the New York Comic-Con, mm-hmm. and San Diego Comic-Con. We do about 25 shows a year. I don't go to all of them, but we have a little department that does that. And all the people who run our conventions are fans. They're fans. Ron Mackey from Buffalo,
mm-hmm.
he's a fan, and he and his wife, yep. and the fans, they go... They handle the conventions for Trauma and set up the booths east of the Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jimmy Wright heads up the Southeast, and he's a fan. And none of these people gets paid. And then Megan Silver and Marcus Lesser run the conventions for Trauma in the West, California. And it's really a kind of a family of trauma fans. I think it's you know, there are trauma bumper stickers, and
mm-hmm.
You know, I love Traumaville bumper stickers, and people see the bumper sticker on the highway and they wave to each other, and I think it's just the sincerity of our movies that that people love, and the fact that we don't take ourselves seriously, mm-hmm. but we take our movies really, really seriously. That we are, it's been our 40th year this year, and there aren't too many people who run studios who really love movies.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and there certainly aren't any independent studios that come close to being 40 years.
And that's the thing.
You know, we're the East Coast sort of version of Roger Corman, but
right.
we are not financially successful. He is extremely rich, but he loves movies and he's a great guy. He sold his company a few times. We have been the same for mm-hmm. same company for 40 years now. And I think I first became aware of the strength of the fan base. I think when the I started getting invited to in conventions, mm-hmm. and I would people would line up for my autograph, and then we started to get booths at these conventions. This goes back 30 years ago, and it was around 1980. It was about a year after Toxic Avenger. I'm signing autographs for 2 hours. I don't charge for autographs, mm-hmm. by the way. I don't like the concept, and I don't charge for autographs. And I was very happy to see that James Gunn, also, we were both in Atlanta at mm-hmm. Dragon Con this year, and he and I were the only so-called celebrities who didn't charge for autographs. And but I noticed around, I guess it was 86, 87, somewhere in that zone, that I'd show up at the trauma booth at a convention and there'd be a huge line for autographs. So I knew something was up. And then a lot of the fans, I think, had watched the Toxic Crusaders cartoons
mm-hmm.
on television. And then when they got a little older, they started to see the Toxic Avenger movies on DVD or video or VHS, and I think that has a lot to do with it.
Hmm.
But
I'm one of the.
It's hard to say when I first, but I think it was really at the conventions that I first started realizing, holy cow, they know about trauma out here, even though we have no revenue and no distribution anywhere. There's a big fan base out there.
Mm-hmm. And is there anything like...
And let's face it, mm-hmm. in a fair world, Poultrygeist should have been a huge hit. Mark Neveldine
no
and Brian Taylor were making Gamer in Albuquerque, and Poultrygeist was being shown at a little theater called The Guild in Albuquerque, and they invited me, the theater invited me to do a Q&A. And in the audience, there were Mark Neveldine and Brian Taylor, who had been, you know, working on the set of their own movie, Gamer, a $60 million or $80 million movie with Gerard Butler, and some big stars. And there they are in this little movie theater coming to see Poltergeist. And they said the exact, they said it, in a fair world, Poltergeist would have made millions of dollars. Instead, we lost every penny. And my wife and I put up the money.
Wow.
And my film commissioner wife and I put up all the money. We basically lost 90% of the, it was $500,000, and we lost 90% of it. It's pretty grim if you're an independent filmmaker, unless you're in with one of the vassals of a giant conglomerate. You've got no chance of getting to the public. You know, just the conglomerates control all the paths of distribution except for the internet, and there really isn't any. And even the internet is being colonized by NBC and Disney. So it's very hard. It's almost impossible to. I don't know how. Honestly, Michael Herr is my partner. It's running the company, and somehow he's able to keep us going. You know, we have about 12 employees, and all young, and they all love movies. And I think it's the love of cinema that basically propels Troma.
And that's the thing too, because I mean, like, Troma movies are pure cinema in the sense that it's pure entertainment. I mean, and when you talk about the big conglomerates and the big studios and so on and so forth, they don't love the movies. It's the product, right? It's just okay.
That's right. They call it product. It's the same thing they call bananas.
Exactly.
Bananas. United Fruit Company. That's a Chiquita Bananas. That's a product.
And if you have somebody with a passion and a flair for movies, you know, eventually they're just going to take them and beat them down, and where, you know, until they have to sort of conform to the product and to basically, you know, what the audience expectations and the focus groups and on and all that bullshit, right? Whereas,
I think Harvey Weinstein, even though he may be a tough, from what I understand, he's kind of monstrous. But I believe he loves movies. I do believe he's the last of the moguls who love cinema.
Yeah,
you know,
most true.
They did love cinema. Those guys, they were bastards, but they, you know, the Louis B. Mayers and Cohen from Columbia. They were tough cookies, but I think they really did love movies, and I think Weinstein's the last of the movie moguls who really love the cinema. Everyone else in the mainstream are suits and accountants and bean agents and bean counters and all that. And the fuck of it is, they get it right. Look with the Guardians of the Galaxy. It's Disney. It's Marvel. Disney. And they were made a masterpiece. That's a masterpiece. And they had to, somehow they chose James Gunn, the guy who wrote Romeo and Juliet, a movie that promotes incest. they used him to make a $200 million movie, and boy, and it's a wonderful movie. Eli Roth is in the mainstream. He's great, a wonderful person. And Trey and Matt from South Park, who did Cannibal the Musical of Troma, they're great. I mean, they're great people in the mainstream. But that's there aren't many of them. There aren't many of them.
So, I mean, okay, so there you go. So you're talking about James Gunn and, you know, the people that have come out of Troma and have, you know, become mainstream successes, and they're, I mean, they're indebted to you guys. I mean, every time you see Eli Roth being interviewed or Trey Parker, Matt Stone, they're always talking about how great Troma is and Lloyd is and so on and so forth.
In fact, Eli Roth recently, and I think this has a lot to do with why the fans keep us going. And he went out of his way. We put out the Bloodsucking Freaks Blu-ray, and Eli Roth is obsessed with that movie. He originally, when we put out the Bloodsucking Freaks DVD, he did the commentary track, and here it is now this year. And he doesn't need publicity. He doesn't need anything from us. He did it because he loves the film and he loves Troma. If you go get the Bloodsucking Freaks Blu-ray, you'll see Eli Roth on camera talking about Bloodsucking Freaks and further describing why it's a worthy film. And one of our fans, who is a filmmaker named Adam Deloy, out in California. We're based in New York. We couldn't possibly afford to get a crew or pay a crew. Adam Deloy went and shot the interview with the. It's a long piece too with Eli Roth. Very intelligent, discussing and deconstructing Bloodsucking Freaks mm-hmm. for the Blu-ray. And Adam has made a movie that we distribute called Yeti, a gay love story, and he's just made a second Yeti, a gay love story part two, in which I have a cameo. And the other thing that shows you how nice some of our fans are, Eli Roth, again, a mainstream person now, but Adam, he was impressed with Adam and Yeti, a gay love story, and Eli helped Adam raise the rest of Adam's crowdfunding. Eli mm-hmm. went online and said, please help Adam with Yeti, a gay love story, volume two. Part two, not volume, part two. Mm-hmm. And Adam got the last $5,000 thanks to Eli Roth. So how cool is that? That James Gunn puts me in his... I mean, the Troma people are really nice people, and they love the... And when they get in the mainstream, they usually want to try to, you know, at least help Troma, or at least keep Troma in the eye of the public a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And James Gunn, every interview he talks about, I mean, he's the best.
You know, it's kind of funny, because as we're talking, I mean, I'm a massive, massive Ramones fan. And in a lot of ways, I'm thinking, you know, as you're speaking about Troma, I'm thinking about the Ramones in the sense that, you know, this was a band that was tremendously influential, and yet never saw a dime for their efforts while they were alive. Do you know what I mean?
They were huge, so they have a much, much, much bigger following than we do.
They do, but at the same token, I mean, I was reading Johnny Ramone's biography, and when he passed away, he had $30,000 to his name. And, you know, it's a shame that, like, of the four original members, only four of them are still... all four of them are gone, but... I mean, now they're making money hand over fist.
Well, is Didi Ramone is in our... we did a Troma infomercial about 15, 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
When Comedy Central first began, they needed what they call content.
Right.
And they asked me to come up with something funny, and we did a Troma self-improvement... it was the age of... Remember those infomercials,
yep.
Stop the Madness and that kind of stuff. So we did a self-improvement, very funny infomercial, and Didi Ramone actually has a little cameo in it.
Mm. And,
he's also, by the way, wait a minute, he's also in, if I'm not mistaken, oh no, Gigi Allen is in... is in Romeo and Juliet.
Mm-hmm. And of course, we wrote a piece about male musicians acting in horror films. So of course we put Lemmy in there, you know, with all his contributions.
The Motorhead is very much in touch with his fans. I listen to the fans. The fans have given me so many good ideas. That's the other part of it. When I went on my first book tour, all the fans were every bookstore I went to. Someone would raise her hand and say, "What would happen if Toxie and Sergeant Kabuki Man NYPD had a fight?"
Mm.
And at first, I thought, "Oh, please, this is stupid." And because they're both good guys, and they wouldn't be fighting each other. But the question came up so many times. So when Trent Haga was writing the script to the fourth Toxic mm-hmm. Avenger movie, Citizen Toxie, I told him, look, you got to figure out a way where the Toxic Avenger and Sergeant Kabuki Man can fight. And he came up with the alternate universe thing where you have evil Kabuki Man fighting good Toxie.
Mm-hmm.
And the fans, that was the fans' idea. And the fans also were the ones who told us to get a website up. And Troma had a website way before. That's why a documentary about Troma and the fans, because they're the ones who've given us You know, we talk about being movies of the future and being a step ahead of the mainstream. The fans are the ones that told us to start a website, and we did that way before the majors. I think we were the... Roger Ebert said that I was the first studio head to be on online. I was on CompuServe back in the first... You know, that back in the days before even, I think, before any of this stuff. CompuServe was one of the first... Interactive, it was way before Facebook, any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's safe to say, I mean, maybe I'm talking about myself in particular, but also from the other Troma fans that I've met over the years. I mean, it's almost like we're, you know, we're an army, almost like the KISS army. Do you know what I mean? We would like.
Yeah, in fact, if you go to my Twitter, I'm on Twitter, there is a group called the Troma Army, and they support us. It's not a fan club, but they. They are a small group who call themselves the Troma Army, and they're out there beating the bushes to tell people anytime I tweet something about a Troma movie in a theater or a book, whatever's coming out, a new movie, they go out and try to spread the news, which is, you know, because we can't afford advertising since we have no revenue to speak of.
But yeah, no, I mean, we would.
True. Yeah. What you say is true.
Mm-hmm, yeah, we would fight tooth and nail for Troma because I think. Ultimately, when it comes down to it, I think that the Troma is so much more than just a movie studio. I mean, it's like the movies are wonderful. The movie, like I said, pure cinema, pure entertainment. You're amazing in the sense that almost. Well, that's another thing too. I mean, the fact that you introduce every movie, it's like you become part of our family. You know what I mean? Like you're there, sort of like guiding us through this sort of weird, wacky world of Troma. So that's that. I think.
Well, also, by the way, one of my favorite introductions is the introduction to the Toxic Crusaders DVD, in which it's up on YouTube. Troma has a YouTube, two or three. We have three YouTube channels.
Yep.
But it's up there, and I introduce the little kids, the 5-year-old kids, to the evil mega conglomerates. That's the best one. As Uncle Lloydy. Can you say evil devil worship mega conglomerate? And it's amazing how many fans who are now 20 or 25 remember that introduction. And it actually, you know, I think I may have influenced them a little bit.
And, you know, it's funny, too, because as we're talking, I mean, like I said, like, I had this whole script of questions, but, like, as we're talking, just things are popping in my head, and one of the things that I'm thinking about, as growing up, I mean, I don't want to, you know, I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but I'm not the dumbest either. I think I have a brain or two.
No, you're very well prepared. Just the fact that you have read some books is a big deal.
But, you know, I mean, one of the things that really, I think, had a real formative influence on my worldview and the way I see things was Mad Magazine, because Mad Magazine basically it sort of came under the guise of like a harmless kids comic book, funny pictures and so on and so forth, but at least in the 80s when I was reading it, I don't know what it's like now, but it was extremely satirical, extremely incisive, extremely, like, you know, sort of subversing the status quo and so on and so forth. And perhaps in a sense, us young kids that discovered Troma at the age of 13-14 and we saw Kabuki Man or Toxic Avenger, and they just look like kind of funny characters. I mean, all of a sudden, we start, maybe by osmosis or what have you, like, we start developing this real sort of worldview, which is different from those that grew up watching, you know, the Care Bears. And perhaps that's what it is. That's the defining features, that we all have this unique sort of worldview and that's been informed by Troma. And that makes a...
I think that's a very good point, and because I definitely was influenced by Mad Magazine as a kid. I loved Mad, and I especially loved Don Fester and Carbuncle. What's his name? The cartoonist.
I know. The name is on the top of my head. Don's... Oh, I can't remember. Don... I forget.
Oh, my God. Oh, my gosh. Anyway, Fester and Carbuncle and... Mm-hmm. His characters, I loved that, and of course the satire of you bet, the satire of Mad was unlike anything other than I used to read Punch magazine. From my father subscribed to Punch magazine, which was a British was a lot more sophisticated than Mad, but it was also great satire. Mm-hmm. And I always liked the satire.
But I mean, and also, I mean, when they would satirize you know, the big budget Hollywood blockbusters, I mean, right then and there they're basically, yes, ripping it apart and, you know, taking the piss out of it and saying, like, okay, guys, I mean, they're sort of pulling the wool over your eyes, you know,
And they were against smoking long before anybody was. They had an ad, and this goes before your time, they had the back cover for Salem cigarettes. Salem, don't inhale them. And they had people making little sailboats out of the cigarette packages against smoking. I mean, it was a satirical, funny, and they came up with a pretty good slogan, Salem, don't inhale them.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff. Mad was great, and still is. Actually, somebody anonymously gave me a subscription to Mad this year. It had to be one of my children, but none of them would fess up. And it's still pretty damn good, and considering that it was acquired by DC, which is part of Warner's,
mm-hmm.
They've obviously kept their hands off Mad, and it's pretty funny.
Mm-hmm.
Check it out. It's not bad.
So I was going to ask you, like what similarities have you noticed amongst Troma fans and so on and so forth? But I think now as we're speaking, I think I've sort of discovered in the sense that I think what unites us really is the fact that we don't take the bullshit that the major conglomerates give us. You know what I mean? We don't, we don't just basically whatever they shove us, we just accept without and say yeah, more please. You know what I mean? Thanks to Troma, thanks to this sort of worldview, this sort of parody, yet I don't want to say cynicism, but because it's all with great humor, but I think that's what unites us fans. We don't accept the mainstream. Do you know what I mean? Like, we're looking for something different.
If you look at South Park, South Park is cartoons, and they've been able to kind of bring the Troma satire and graphic slapstick violence to the cartoon screen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Trey Parker and Matt Stone have single-handedly energized the American world of satire.
Without a doubt, yep.
We've been doing satire my 50-year career, but again, to a very small demographic. But because they had the genius to do the cartoon mm-hmm. thing, they can have people getting blown up and then having rats eat the pieces of body parts. We did that in movies, but we get an X rating for it until recently. So it's pretty interesting. The whole world of satire was dead. The American satire was basically, I think, Mad Magazine and then, Troma mm-hmm. down in the underground, and then it exploded with the South Park. The Monty Python were a very good satire, and that they clearly were a big influence on me.
Mm-hmm.
But our fans, I think our fans they're not rich. Our fans are very poor,
yep.
Which is why I definitely don't charge for autographs, and I don't need to either. But I think if there are directors and actors who need the money, they should charge, but for William Shatner to be charging $400
or
whatever he charges. Sylvester Stallone was charging $500 for an autograph at the New York Comic Con, and then they cut him off at $1,000. He cut the line off at $1,000. I don't see why he's got to charge these.
And they don't even look you in the eye when they're signing your autograph. It's like, it's an assembly line.
The fans that I have met are generally not rich. They don't go to Yale or Harvard. But they're very wise, and they're thinking, and they're trying to figure it out. They're trying to figure out life, and just what you said, they get it that there is a conspiracy between the labor elite, the labor union leaders who make millions of dollars while they're members are eating dog food, the bureaucratic elite, the U.S. Bureaucracy, Congress, etc., who are stuffing themselves off of the public taxpayers, and then the corporate elite. And those three elites are a club, and it's a revolving door. The person who used to be head of the Environmental Protection Department of the government then becomes chairman of the board of waste management, and the guy who used to be head of the union becomes secretary of the interior or secretary of labor, and it's a club, and that's the premise of every movie I've written and directed. And I think our fans get it. They get it, and they realize they're being rat-fucked, and they realize there is very little upward mobility, unless you are part of the elite and get to go to Princeton and become part of the American ruling class. And they understand, they, you know, they're remarkably well, well informed, much better informed than a lot of rich people who live on Beverly Hills or Park Avenue,
yep.
And it's really interesting. Yep. If you talk to the people who run our conventions, if you talk to Megan and Marcus and Ron and Kathy,
Ron and Ron and Kathy are the ones
that are there at the booths, the fans who you know, come and buy our DVDs and T-shirts and posters and toys. They are smart people. They just aren't rich.
So, I mean, okay, so looking at, okay, so, I mean, you know, you've been in this for 40 years of real independence, and I hope 40 more years.
thank you.
But, you know, if that's going to be, if Troma's legacy is not going to be that you've, you know, made a movie that made $400 million at the worldwide box office like Guardians of the Galaxy, but that you have these legions of fans that not only are dedicated, not only are devoted, not only are connected, but that we're smart, free-thinking, critical individuals that aren't going to take, you know, the bullshit that the mass media is shoveling at us. Is that a legacy to be proud of? I think it is.
Sure. And, you know, I give master classes, and I've done them all over the world. And so I think I'm kind of a Johnny Appleseed of independent art and commerce, because I talk about how, you know, I'm sharing all the secrets to Troma's business side, mm-hmm. as well as the aesthetics. And, there are, I think at this point, thousands of filmmakers out there who are, especially with the digital revolution, where the democratization of filmmaking is worldwide. Anyone can make a movie now. So there are thousands of Troma-influenced movies, or movie makers who are influenced by my Make Your Own Damn Movie masterclasses, mm-hmm. and books and videos. You know, we have a channel called, you probably know it, Make Your Own Damn Movie Channel.
Yep.
And every week we put up a new video about some segment of how Troma either makes or distributes or raises money, mm-hmm. or whatever. And so on the one hand, we love making movies, but on the other hand, Michael Herz and I have seen, once we got established, after about 15 years, we decided we wanted to devote ourselves to also proselytizing for independent, mm-hmm. art, and trying to keep the profile and raise the profile of truly independent art.
And I think also that's also, you know, I guess where the punk analogy comes back in as well, because, you know, you hear that story. I mean, it's been sort of a myth that's been debunked, but that, like, everybody that saw the Sex Pistols' first gig in England went off and formed a band, right? But at the same time, you know, you would have, you know, people coming, like, eight people to see a show, and then all of a sudden everybody wants to form a band, right? And before you know it, this movement is spreading, and it may, perhaps with Troma, it's like, okay, well, I've seen this movie. It's amazing. It's a lot of fun. I have this story I want to tell. Lloyd's telling me how to do it. I'm going to make my own damn movie. And so there we are. There you go. You know, you're spreading. The Troma ethos is spreading.
Oh, it's great. It's terrific. And I think that in addition to our movies, to make up the legacy of Troma, and how proud we are of that. And, you know, when I went to Russia the first time, which was about 15 years ago, I did a music video there for Korabala. Mm-hmm. And I was amazing. People were giving me, this was before 1989, before the wall came down, mm-hmm. and people knew Troma. It was all thanks to bootlegging. But I was signing VHS boxes, and they were mimeographed, they were box covers that were, you know, handmade and whatever. I mean, not handmade, but kind of mimeographed, black and white mimeographs, crappy looking VHS. And I was happy with that. I didn't mind it. I was really happy that Troma is all over the place. Mm. You know, I'm not exactly delighted that our DVDs are all over China, that our movies are all over China, and we've never gotten one penny for it. I'm really pissed off about
it. But then on the other hand,
by the same token, people know us. You know,
right.
I was on the airplane going to Australia, and I'm sitting next to a nice, attractive young couple, and they recognize me.
Well,
yeah, they were Australian, and they recognized me because they said they had rented Terra Firma a long time ago, and they saw me in the movie. So there's a big awareness of Choma has a big footprint on the countryside of culture, but unfortunately, no revenue.
Mm. But see, that's another thing too. I mean, because we talk about revenue. I mean, when you started posting full movies on YouTube, I was pretty surprised. I mean, in my mind, I was like, "What's the rationale behind this?" In the sense that you're sort of cutting out a pretty big revenue stream, which is DVD sales. And I guess maybe in the age of piracy, maybe you wanted to combat that and just put up there.
No, we wanted to thank our fans for 40 years of supporting us. I don't know how long we'll keep those movies up there, but you know, our movies aren't going to get into any big retail stores. Our movies aren't going to get onto cable. Aren't going to get so. What the fuck? Give them away to our fans.
Yeah.
You know why? Why make it difficult? Let our fans have them, and people in India can watch if they want and steal the movies anyway. I've got a poster here in my office. A theatrical poster from India. It's beautiful. It's a. Kind of a block print, and it says it's Liberty Theater, it's DTS, and it says daily three shows, Poultrygeist, 2 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 8 o'clock, it says English, color, nonstop horror, and glamour.
Glamour as well.
And it's got some writing on it that it's got some kind of Hindu, I guess it's Hindu writing, it's not Arabic.
So is
it's beautiful, you know, it's clearly somebody drew it by hand, and it's wonderfully... it's really artistic, but so somehow they were showing it in the movie theaters, and so that's pretty cool.
So
right?
perhaps Bollywood Toxic Avenger's not far behind.
Yeah, well, you'll see some Bollywood in Volume 2 of we've got some Bollywood in Volume 2 of Return to Nukumar.
I'm looking forward to that. I heard that it was Quentin Tarantino that urged you to split into two parts. Is that true or?
Yes, but that was a long time ago. He suggested doing something kind of monumental so we could differentiate ourselves a bit, since there are so many so-called independent movies out there. You know, the independent movies that you get in your movie theater, for the most part, are released by Fox Searchlight or vassals of the major conglomerates.
Exactly.
Right. There are lots of them. There are lots of them.
Yep.
And on my Twitter, I talk a lot about that. And by the way, I answer all the people who want to contact me. The best way to do it is on Twitter. I do answer all my own Twitter. And there's also a LloydKaufman.com fan site. And they send me some of the... They're not that efficient, but they do send me some of
the
stuff.
The other thing too, what you recently posted on Lloyd's Roids about females in the horror genre was quite an incredible piece of writing, and again, it needed to be said, and who better say it but Lloyd Kaufman.
Oh, thank you. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
And it was a couple of years ago, and I noticed I was on my recent trip to Australia.
It was basically retweeted, so I thought it was brand new because it was retweeted on Twitter, and that's why I'm sorry that I didn't realize it was a couple of years ago.
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned it. It's still an important message, and the good news is I in Australia I was at a film festival. And the people that brought me in to do the masterclass, they ran a film festival called Monster Fest, and I saw three or four movies in the horror genre directed by females. How cool is that? Really good ones too. Wonderful
and,
films.
I mean, obviously you're aware of The Babadook, right? That's like sort of like kind of like the horror.
Yes, I haven't seen it yet. Is it good?
It's not. You know what? It is good. It really is good.
Is it really scary?
Psychologically, yeah, it's we reviewed it on the site because we saw it at the After Dark Festival here in Toronto, and
right.
It's, you know, I mean, there is a lot of hype, and a lot of times when you you know, like I think of like the Blair Witch Project, I think in that case the hype sort of took over and made it seem to be something much more than what it really was, In this case, I think...
Well, it's a non-male director, right? Which
yep.
is very cool.
Yep.
So.
It's a female Australian director.
That's terrific, yeah. And then there was one up with about the honeymoon. Is it called Honeymoon? That was terrific.
Mm-hmm.
It was great. Have you seen that one?
That one I haven't seen, no.
Oh, it's fabulous. The Honeymoon, it's, and it's a female director. I can't remember her name, but she's terrific. And yeah, there is progress being made,
yeah.
which is great. That's always good.
And that's the thing too, because I mean, with like, you know, things like, you know, horror movies, comic books, etc., it's always been this very exclusive boys club, and
yep.
it's, you know, it's definitely long overdue that boys club is you know, starts letting girls in. You know, instead
that's
of putting
right.
up
yeah,
these.
Sure, it still is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The trouble is, they let in girls like Amy Pascal, and you know,
quite true.
Nasty people. Pity.
Yeah, no, it was pretty shocking stuff to read, but you know, at least maybe it's gonna open people's eyes up to. I don't know. I don't think people.
It's great in a way. I'd say you know, yeah, people should know the truth.
Yep.
There's no one to know the people supplying your entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
A small amount of it's very good, but so much of it is just baby food. You know, you can live on baby food, but it sure is boring.
Yep. It's gay, yeah, exactly. I would say, I mean, when you say baby food, at least baby food has nutrition. A lot of these movies don't, you know what I mean? So.
Yeah, good point. Very good point. Yeah, I hadn't thought of it that way. You're right.
But, you know, it's funny because, I mean, I know you're extremely busy. I don't want to, I mean, I could talk to you for hours and hours and hours. I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I wanted to basically, I mean, as a 25-year traumatic, I'm not 25 years old, a bit older than that, but somebody who's been into trauma for 25 years, I've had three dreams in my life. The first one you've just sort of helped facilitate, and that's to interview you. Second one is to tour the trauma studios, and I hope to do that one day.
Great.
Next time in New York.
Just ring the doorbell. Usually people... just ring the doorbell and we have a guy here who gives a nice little tour. Again, we're a very small, we own a small building in New York, and,
mm-hmm.
But it's very colorful and pretty interesting, so just ring the doorbell.
Yep, and the third one,
I mean, it is better if you contact us ahead of time.
Yeah, of course. No one likes someone,
people constantly come here with somebody
who
gives little tours.
No one likes unannounced house guests, right? But the third one...
we have tourists, especially during the summer. We have tourists every day. Literally every day.
The third dream,
from
though.
From all over the world.
Yep.
From all over the world. It's really interesting.
That's The third one, though, it's, I guess, me and my site partner, Chris. I mean, this one's a little more, I guess, harder to realize, but hopefully one of these days, we want to get killed in a trauma movie. That's a dream of ours.
Oh, gee. Right now, we're pretty much... We still have a little second unit work, but no more killings. We just did our last two kills this week, but for volume two of Return to Nuke 'Em High.
Mm-hmm.
But the next one up is a movie we're making in. I'm not directing it, but we're producing it in Portugal called Mutant Blast. I'm sure if you can get to Portugal, we can kill you. But so it's going to be a while before we can kill anyone in the North American. Toxie 5, we've written, but we need help with the budget. We've got about half the money. If there's anybody out there,
is there?
We need six. We have a budget of $600,000. We need $300,000.
Yeah.
I have half of it, but I need the other. It's written for Chernobyl, and we had a Ukrainian billionaire who was going to pay for us to come over there. And
would Trump ever go the Kickstarter route to raise funds?
I don't know that we could raise it. We did go crowdsource Occupy Can,
mm-hmm.
and our fans raised about half the budget. That's an $80,000 documentary. They raised about $40,000 or $50,000.
I
think our fans are just not rich enough. I don't think we have enough fans. It's something to think about, though. You're right. That's a good point. Mm-hmm. I hadn't thought about it. Maybe a Toxic Avenger movie. Maybe the fifth Toxic Avenger might. Maybe there are enough fans out there who might add up to 300,000. It's a good point.
Because I was gonna say, I mean, I need to see a Toxi 5, and I've got about $9 in my pocket right about now. I could send it over.
Well, again, if we had 500,000 people who each put up $5, boy, wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah.
But Michael Herz is not really that keen on crowdfunding.
Well, it's interesting because I don't know. I mean, Dario Argento is doing it right now, and
I noticed he made it too, didn't he? Make it, but he only did 150,000, yeah. Right?
And I mean, I contributed, as little as I could. I mean, not as little as I could. I kind of got to the sort of level where I wanted to kind of get what I wanted to get, and. But at the same time, I mean, it kind of, I'm thinking like Dario Argento. I mean, the Italian Hitchcock, you know, the maestro of Italian horror, and now he's, it's interesting. You know what I mean? I don't know. I don't know what I think about Kickstarting and crowdfunding and Indiegogo and all that right now. It's I think it's great for the truly independent artists, but when you have people who should have other avenues to get funds, and I'm not including Chroma in this at all. You know what I mean? But you would think.
No, I agree with you. In other words, Amanda Palmer did it for her music, and, mm-hmm. and she's wonderful. That's terrific. She was getting ripped off by her distributor, by her publisher, and she did her Kickstarter, and her fans gave her $1.5 million so she could record the music, distribute her music, and go on tour. All of it, and she's great. She did a TED speech. And just brilliant, just one touching and interesting and incisive. And somebody like her, great. But Spike Lee going out there and raising $3 million from poor people, I don't buy that at all.
I mean, this is the guy that was doing Nike commercials.
He's got a $30 million townhouse in New York, a private house.
Yeah.
I don't think he needs to raise money. And that TV star from Scrubs. I don't know why he had to raise $2 million or whatever, how many great projects? I think the great thing about Kickstarter is that it's more interesting, really, in the invention area. People creating better mousetraps, and who would have to give up their really useful, practical, making the world a better place. Inventions that would either get taken over, that the only way they could make the thing would be with some giant corporation who would then own it or take it away from them or whatever. How great that Kickstarter lets these people make their invention, and then they can go to, some big corporation and at least be in a fairer position to negotiate. You know, it's like these TV shows, in a way. They're people who depend, like Shark Tank.
Yep,
you know that one?
Shark Tank, Dragonstan, yep.
Yeah, I don't watch it very often, but whenever I do, I find it very interesting. I find the people on the panel disgusting.
I agree.
The way they talk and their smugness and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But they're all self-made millionaires. You got to respect that. In the case of Mark Cuban, they're self-made billionaires. and look how many little entrepreneurs there are. Every show, they empower somebody to be an independent entrepreneur.
Yeah.
How cool is that?
Unfortunately, we sent you one of our least proud imports here in Canada, Kevin O'Leary. We're not very proud of him. He came from our version, Dragon's Den, over to Shark Tank. Mr. Wonderful,
He's one of the panelists.
Yeah.
But he's a self-made millionaire, right? I can't remember. What is his, what does he do?
I don't know. He just, all he says is, I just want money, 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 money. That's the whole thing. I think he's more out there for himself as opposed to helping out entrepreneurs and so on and so forth.
Well, all of them on the panel are smug, disgusting people. But they are self-made. They did something. They started with nothing.
Mm-hmm.
The guy with FUBU or whatever, the FUBU clothes, whatever that thing is, he started with nothing and he's got a huge empire.
Mm-hmm.
And in the face of a world that is, based on my movies, controlled by three elites, the labor elite, the corporate elite, mm-hmm. and the bureaucratic elite that pretty much control everything and are a very difficult... wall to penetrate, and these guys on the panel all did it, but they sure are narcissistic, disgusting you know, that real estate woman and the But nonetheless, it's a rather fascinating show. And again, on the on the good side, they've empowered all these little entrepreneurs, some of whom probably are going to do very, very well, and wouldn't be doing very, very, very well if they had to go through the normal channels of the food chain.
But I think at the end of the day, when it comes to Troma, I mean, you know, and what you said before about being the Johnny Appleseed, I mean, that's the thing. You're empowering all of us who basically, I mean, you know, make your own damn movie, produce your own damn movie, pick up the camera. I read Make Your Own Damn Movie without even intention of making a movie, and then I now want to make a movie. Do you know what I mean?
No, that's great. Well, sing it to the world. That's wonderful. That's really wonderful.
And
do it.
So as I guess the Troma Army marches on, we're going to continue spreading the word and making these movies and bringing this entertainment to the world that that the world needs. So I think ultimately I think that, you know, that's a legacy to be really, really proud of. I mean, you must feel like a bit of like a proud parent when, you know, James Gunn goes off and makes the highest grossing film of the year, obviously, considering that he was incubated within Troma, right?
Well, again, people look down their noses at Troma, but look at the people who we've empowered. Samuel Jackson, he's the biggest money-making actor. His movies make more money than any other actor, at least if he's not number one, he's, in terms of dollars, he has been the number one grossing actor in the world. James Gunn, number one. Trey Parker and Matt Stone of South Park. I mean, that's a long list of people who
Kevin Costner,
our little incubator, so to speak.
Yep.
So we're terribly proud of that, and they're good people. They are very nice people. Eli Roth is the best, and so on, and you know, that's even people. Tarantino loves Troma. Guillermo del Toro, who's never worked for us, he loves us and talks about us. Sam Raimi's a fan. There's so many of the good, intelligent, mainstream artists who really love Troma.
So, and these are all, you know, artists that I respect, so that's a good thing.
I just wish we could get a little bit of revenue. I wish we could get on to, the Poltergeist is the perfect example.
Yeah.
And by the way, if you want proof that the industry is a oligopoly and there's no way to penetrate if you want to make money, you've got to be in with one of the vassals. Return to Newcomb High, Volume 1. We are partners with one of the giant devil-worshipping international media conglomerates, STARZ, S-T-A-R-Z, who are owned by Liberty, which is one of the giant conglomerates. That we've been profitable because they have the power to get our movie into all the big stores like Walmart and the HMV.
Actually, I was amazed when I saw that movie.
They'll put Starz Television. They'll get it on Chorus or whatever. It'll be on Rogers or whatever stations you guys have. And because they can, they can do it. The movie has exploding penises in it and breasts that spit. Well, you saw Return of the New.
I have. Oh yeah, without a doubt. I didn't buy it from Walmart. I mean, I bought it at my local.
So that movie was profitable because we were in with a giant a vassal of one of the media conglomerates. But they gave us total freedom.
Good.
It's a very small budget, but we had total freedom. Poultrygeist, which I think is actually a better movie. We couldn't get 10 cents from because Troma was distributing it, and we are economically blacklisted.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing I tell my students in the master classes is, if you want to walk the red carpet and if you want the millions of dollars, you're going to have to go and hook up with one of the vassals of a major media conglomerate if you want to be totally independent and suffer for your art like Troma. Then you can stay in New York or Quebec or Melbourne, Australia, and make your own damn movies. Maybe have a day job and eventually, sell your movies on conventions and on your internet site. And slowly but surely, you build up a worldwide fan base that'll take care of you. At least keep you alive.
Well, I think for some of us, for Troma fans in particular, I don't think we really want to walk that red carpet. You know what I mean? We want that. We want the Troma model. That's what we want.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
yeah.
It's the integrity.
My wife was New York Film Commissioner for New York State for 20 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she'd get invited to all the openings, and there would be parties afterwards. And they have a party within the party. They have a roped off area inside the party where the big shots, you know, and I wouldn't go in there.
Right.
I'd accompany her to the party itself, but I refused to go into the elite place. It's just so disgusting.
Oh, yeah. So you could probably cut the bullshit with a knife in there, I can imagine.
Well, you know, you see, what it is like it can, the same thing. They got a party, and then they've got the roped-off area within the party mm-hmm. where you see Sylvester Stallone and some thugs sitting around with grim faces looking very unhappy, mm-hmm. and, you know, it's just horrible. And now you can see why. You've got Amy Pascal and these nasty people who are determining what the American public sees. You know, it's just nastiness all up and down the food chain.
Yep.
And there are very few, very, very few exceptions. And I bet that Jolie, whatever her name is, Jolie, what's her name? Jolie. I bet she's a wonderful person. I know her dad very well.
Oh, yeah?
And he's the best. John Voight is the best. Mm-hmm. He's absolutely the most idealistic, decent person you could possibly meet.
Well, see what
you're saying. And he's a huge Troma fan. And I bet that she is a wonderful, wonderful humanitarian.
She is a humanitarian, I was going to say.
That's why they make fun of her. That's why mm-hmm. they were making fun of her in the emails, because she is trying to figure out life, and she is trying to make the world a better place. And people like Amy Pascal and Scott Rudin, they hate people. They don't want to do anything. It's all about them. It's all about how much power you know, they even make fun of the American president. I mean, Jesus Christ.
Oh, yeah, I read that today. That was pretty disgusting.
You know, this guy who we've got as president, who's the fairest, most decent president we've probably ever had.
Agreed, yep.
And they can't even give him respect. You know, it's really, really pathetic.
Yeah.
Anyway, I got to get off. We've got a bunch of people in the editing room.
Not a problem. Lloyd, I have to say, I mean, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you.
Well, thank you, and please keep retweeting the Christmas.
We'll do it about 9 or 12 more times. How's that?
Thank you. That's very kind of you. Try to come down to New York and visit us.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen soon. And I will call ahead, but otherwise, yeah. And listen, I'm a traumatic until the day I die. And I did say this is the other thing before we leave. I said if I got to interview Lloyd, I'm going to get a Toxic Avenger tattoo. So that's going to happen in the next week or so.
Well, send me a photo.
I will send you a photo.
Thank you very much, and your questions and conversation were great. Otherwise, I would have cut it off long ago. Thanks so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. All right, best wishes.
You too.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays and Happy New Year, Lloyd.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Bye.